Government job cuts are worse than expected.
And that drags down the whole employment picture.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday. It's October 8th. This morning, the Labor Department said the U.S. economy lost more jobs last month and government led the way.
We'll have more on that in a moment. Also ahead, the government's decided to fight a kind of eco-fakery known as greenwashing. And all the week's business news in a Marketplace minute. But first,
word from the government that more jobs were lost in September. The economy shed 95,000 jobs last month, but mainly because of laid-off census workers. Meantime, the unemployment rate held steady at 9.6%. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS MoneyWatch. She's with us live from New York this morning. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
All right, so I look at the headline number of the report. I see minus 95,000, and I'm thinking, geez, where's the recovery?
Yeah, and you would be wise to be thinking that. However, you know, the private payroll number was not bad, 64,000 jobs created. There were about 75,000 was the expectation. As you said, we had a big bunch of census workers laid off. We also had local government workers laid off. And so I think that was the part that was somewhat unexpected. I think the reality, as everyone knows, we are in a long slog here.
A long slog. I mean, but I think of all those months we were creating 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 jobs. What was going on there?
You know, I think that we've think back to the bubble, we say, you know, that was a little bit of a false economy. It was juiced up with low interest rates, easy credit. And so all those jobs that popped up really came as a result of a false premise to some extent.
So what's the next thing to juice the economy, Jill? What's going to create more jobs?
I am hoping nothing, as a matter of fact. I mean, I want more jobs, but we don't want it based on some steroid that is injected into a really good athlete. And this economy, the U.S. economy, is really a wonderful athlete, the best economy in the world, but we don't need steroids to juice us up. What we need is a little rest. We need to do a little bit of work, and we will get out of this, but not with steroids, just doing it the old-fashioned way.
The only juice, maybe a little orange juice this morning.
Very
Jill Schlesinger from CBS MoneyWatch. Thanks.
Take care.
And let's get more analysis from our Friday regular chief economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, joining us from New York. Chris, what did you make of this morning's job report?
Well, it wasn't terrible. Look, the good news is the economy is doing a lot better than it was a year ago, and the private sector created 70,000 new jobs in September. What takes the shine off of that is that the unemployment rate was unchanged, and state and local governments let go 85,000 workers, which more than offset the private sector increase.
Right. Unemployment rate stayed at 9.6%. Now, Chris, this is the final jobs report before the election. And before the Fed meets the next day, what's the Fed going to do now?
Well, this is why the markets are essentially unchanged this morning, because investors are taking some solace in the fact that the Fed is likely to embark on another round of quantitative easing at their November meeting.
Yes, quantitative easing. Help us, Chris. What will that mean to our listeners?
I know. It sounds like something out of Star Trek, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about here is an effort to drive long-term interest rates lower. And it's noteworthy that this morning, 10-year note yields are already falling to 2.35%. That means we could see record low mortgage rates as early as next week.
Okay, stimulate, stimulate. Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, October 8th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers inside our website, marketplace.org. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. A new study out of Washington shows how the Great Recession is shaping immigration worldwide. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
Immigration to the United States and European Union has slowed so dramatically since the recession hit, it's at a virtual halt. That's according to the Migration Policy Institute. The study also found the U.S. and EU have deported undocumented laborers at a higher rate and offered fewer visas to skilled foreign workers. Economist Dimitri Papadimitriou says they'll need to include both groups for an economic recovery.
You not only need brains, but you also need brawn.
He says countries that have less restricted immigration, like Canada and Australia, could gain an economic edge.
The countries that will continue to be successful in the near to the mid-future will have immigration systems that respond to the needs of employers, really, all along the jobs continuum.
While immigrants already living in the U.S. and EU face higher unemployment than native citizens, the study says they're more likely to stick it out in new countries than return home. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Moody's says it's taking a closer look at China's government bond rating. The ratings agency said it could upgrade Chinese bonds sometime in the near future, and that is certainly bucking the worldwide trend. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz has more.
It's sort of like a credit score for a country, and lately government bond ratings elsewhere have been plummeting. Moody's says Greek bonds are at junk status, and there's concern about Ireland's debt. Not so for China. Moody's may raise its rating to A1, just a few spots away from the coveted AAA rating. Peking University economist Michael Pettis says it's a vote of confidence.
It says that people believe that China has grown a lot in the last couple of years and will continue growing a lot in the next couple of years.
So now that they've got a higher credit rating, can I interest you in some Chinese government bonds? It's actually not that easy. Foreigners technically aren't allowed to invest in China's domestic bond market, but that'll soon change as Beijing begins a trial investment program for foreign banks. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
The Russian economy has boomed over the past decade, but American firms have been slow to take advantage. Well, the White House says U.S. trade with Russia is about the same as with Thailand, a country with an economy a fifth of the size of Russia's. But as Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow, things may finally be on the move.
Russia's commodity-based economy was hit hard by the financial crisis. To fix that, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev preaches a simple economic mantra: modernize, modernize, modernize. To help achieve that, Russia is reaching out to the U.S.
You know, with respect to the economic relationship, things are have never been as good as they are right now.
Michelle O'Neill of the Commerce Department says Russian firms want more high-tech goods from U.S. companies. She led a delegation of aerospace business leaders to Russia this week.
When we first started talking to the Russian government about the types of companies we should bring to Russia to, again, broaden and deepen the commercial and trade relationship, aviation was at the top of their list and certainly at the top of our list.
Last month, Boeing signed a $3.7 billion contract to supply 50 planes to Russia, and although no deals were clinched this week, executives on the trip expect these first contacts to produce concrete results soon. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
BlackBerry customers in the United Arab Emirates have been at risk of seeing their service cut off. The UAE said the device's encryption technology could jeopardize national security. But as the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports, there's been a deal between the UAE and BlackBerry maker Research in Motion.
The UAE wanted to be able to monitor the information being sent by BlackBerry users, and the government had been threatening to cut off email and instant messaging beginning on Monday. That would have seriously inconvenienced BlackBerry's 500,000 local users, as well as the country's reputation as a business hub in the Middle East. Fevzi Turkalp is editor of GadgetDetective.com. He says even though a deal has now been struck, both sides will want to keep the details as quiet as possible, especially the UAE.
The more information that's in the public domain about what they can do and what they can't do by way of monitoring these messages, the more power that gives to the people that they're trying to monitor. They want those people to be kept in the dark about exactly what they can do and how.
But while RIM may have agreed to hand over some of its paying customers' information, Turkalp says it's unlikely the company would have given in to all of the UAE's demands. And despite this high-profile deal, BlackBerry users still consider it to be one of the most secure networks around. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
In Sydney, Australia today, population experts are discussing a study that says the number of Australians will grow by more than a third by 2050. And population is the topic of today's Marketplace Globalist Quiz with our quizmaster, Stefan Richter. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Are you ready for today's quiz?
I'm ready.
Bill, we know that in 2050, the big three, that is India, China, and the United States, will be the world's most populous countries.
Yes.
My question to you, and it's a tough one, which country will be home to the world's fourth largest population by mid-century? Is it Nigeria, Indonesia, Bangladesh, or Pakistan?
When I don't know, Stephen, I grasp for the one piece of information I have. I think Indonesia is the world's biggest Muslim country, so that's where I'm going, Indonesia.
You're a very educated man. Hey. It is currently the world's most populous Muslim nation. But by 2050, because of a lower fertility rate from currently fourth in the world, it will move down to sixth.
Really? Nigeria, Bangladesh, or Pakistan? I'm just going to look dumber and dumber as I go. I'll say Nigeria.
Nigeria isn't bad.
Uh-oh.
Because it will double its population over the next 40 years. And it will rise to fifth. So you're getting closer, but it's currently eighth. So I'm sorry to kind of keep torturing you today.
Yeah. Well, good term for it. Is Bangladesh really big enough to be the fourth most populous country?
Nope.
Oh.
It will rise. It will go up to seventh, but I guess that
okay,
leaves
I'm
the
guess,
country.
I'm going to guess Pakistan. D.
That's a brilliant guess.
Thank
and see,
you.
I thought you would go for that first because you would have said, well, Pakistan is all in the headlines. And that really tells us quite something because Pakistan, on top of everything else that we hear in the headlines, is going to be a population time bomb. So that's the country that will be fourth by 2050, according to the UN Population Division's projections, at a cool 335 million people.
Educating you, embarrassing me, Stefan Richter, our global quizmaster. Thank you.
We all learn together.
Stefan Richter publishes and edits The Globalist. You can learn more about the global economy, politics, and culture just by going to theglobalist.com. You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, October 8th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. As we mentioned earlier, the U.S. economy lost 95,000 more jobs last month. Other countries are struggling with weak economies as well, and lately they've been competing to stimulate growth, a currency competition that might be unhealthy. That's bound to come up at this weekend's annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith tells us.
Earlier this week, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner expressed his hopes for the IMF meeting.
We believe it's very important to see more progress by the major emerging economies to more flexible, market-oriented exchange rate systems.
Right. What Geithner meant was that he wanted other countries to let their currencies gain value against the dollar.
Geithner's statement was directed squarely at China.
Iswar Prasad is a trade policy expert at the Brookings Institution. He says China and others, like Japan and Brazil, want to keep the value of their currency low, so their products will be cheaper for consumers in other countries. But Prasad says if countries like China keep their currency cheap, it could cause big problems.
If every country is trying to keep the value of its currency from appreciating and we still do not have much job growth, this could start turning into more explicit protectionist measures.
Things like tariffs and limits on imports. Prasad says that could lead to trade wars and be very damaging to the global economy in the long run. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
We keep telling you on this show the price of gold has hit yet another record this morning. It's hovering around $1,341 an ounce. One reason? The World Gold Council said yesterday that for the first time in decades, central banks, the Federal Reserves of the world, are buying more of the precious metal overall than they're selling. Here's Marketplace's Amy Scott to explain.
To understand why central banks have switched from sellers of gold to buyers, it helps to know why they'd been selling it in the first place. Jeffrey Christian follows the market at CPM Group. He says it all goes back to about four decades ago when the world's financial powers moved away from gold as the international currency standard.
All of a sudden, central banks that had used gold for a couple centuries in settling international trade no longer needed that gold for that purpose.
By now, Christian says, central banks in Europe, the U.S., and Japan have sold most of the gold they wanted to, and other countries that had been stockpiling dollars and euros are now buying gold.
They've been saying we need to diversify some of our monetary reserves away from paper currencies into gold.
Christian says central banks are the second biggest factor in the recent price run-up. The first is all the investors clamoring for a safe haven amid the turmoil of the last decade. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The Federal Trade Commission says it's going to rein in companies that say products are greener than they really are. Earlier this week, the FTC offered some proposals on how to do just that, and Marketplace sustainability reporter Adrian Hill is here to talk about those. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Steve.
So what's the FTC trying to do here?
Well, basically, up till now, there just haven't been a lot of rules or guidelines keeping companies from calling their products environmentally friendly or eco-friendly. And you've seen those labels. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Basically, the FTC is stepping in and establishing some new standards.
And what sort of things are we talking about?
A lot of the changes will push marketers to make more specific claims that they'll have to be able to back up. So no super general environment claims, like green, for example. If you're going to say your product is made with renewable material, you're going to need to be clear about what it is and what makes it renewable. If you're going to say you can toss it in the compost, it's got to break down at the same rate as the other things you've thrown in there.
It seems like pretty common sense stuff.
For us, but we're not the unscrupulous marketers the FTC is worried about.
No. And if the FTC busts those people for overstating their environmental friendliness, what then?
Well, the agency can take action if it finds a company is intentionally misleading consumers. It can make them stop, issue fines, and it's done some of this already with the current guidelines. The agency brought a case against a couple companies, including Kmart, for calling some paper products biodegradable. The reasoning is that most paper winds up in landfills or recycling facilities where it's not going to biodegrade. And it's unfair to make consumers think otherwise.
And that's interesting. More transparency, more honesty. I mean, it sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah, for the most part, it does. It's hard for me or anyone to try to navigate the green claims that are on products everywhere, in part because they just don't mean a lot. And this should help the words on the packaging mean what they say. One concern with proposed rules is that in practice, they could be really complicated. If a product now has to list all the very specific ways it's environmentally friendly, it could be a lot to wade through when making a choice.
So then, Adrian, what's next?
Well, it's comment time. The FTC is accepting comments on its rules through mid-December, and we'd love to hear from you on our website, marketplace.org.
All right. Marketplace's sustainability reporter, Adrian Hill. Adrian, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, the week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. That jobs report was less than sunny. Looks like the Fed will be printing money. Japan has slashed its interest rate, and that set off a great debate. If every state tries to inflate so they can create jobs, well, wait, then they start to recriminate, and a trade war could come to the fore, and soon we're exchanging goods no more, and that economists abhor. A shocking exposure about foreclosure. Some of them were less than kosher. And the Beatles have fewer hits than Glee, the musical show on Fox TV just past the guys who did Obladi. I'll see you at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
Obladi. Oblada.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Life goes on. I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.